Welcome to the Heidrick & Struggles Leadership Podcast. Heidrick is the premier global provider of senior-level executive search and leadership consulting services. Diversity and inclusion, leading through tumultuous times, and building thriving teams and organizations are among the core issues we talk with leaders about every day, including in our podcasts. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Hi, I'm Federico Guerreschi, principal in Heidrick & Struggles Milan office and a member of the Global Technology and Service Practice, which focuses on technology, digital and innovation space across a wide range of industries. In today's podcast, I'm excited to speak to José Pedro Almeida. JP has been chief AI strategist at various companies and is now an advisory board member for Intelligent Ventures, an emerging US venture capital investing at the intersection of AI and healthcare within the United States. JP, you are recognized as one of the world's top 70 health AI brains for your work on some of the world's most transformative big data and artificial intelligence platforms in large healthcare organizations. You've also been recently named among the top 25 digital health leaders to follow 2024. JP, welcome and thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Federico.
So JP, could you please start off by telling us why generative AI is a real game changer within the technology sector?
We're moving from an age where we had to explicitly tell computers how to do things. They were merely tools for us. And we're moving to an age where basically computers started understanding our world. And that is highly transformational. And that happened because of a breakthrough that happened in a specific area of AI, which was deep learning, a new architecture that, you know, is called Transformers architecture that suddenly allowed these models to be trained at internet scale. And it happens that when you train models at internet scale with all the information that's available publicly from forums, all the books, when you train at that scale, these models start to show some emerging capabilities. So they start to be able to summarize any text, to translate to any language. They start to resonate on top of the data that they learned from because they start to be world models. They can predict what is happening next. And so what we are talking about is a technology that suddenly starts to become indistinguishable from humans because these models, as they learn and understand our world, they will start to hear, to speak, and to act as we do. And to give you just a short example of how this will be impactful to any company, if you look at what's happening at Tesla, which their full self-driving for several years has been running on several AI models, they were trying to take this forward, but there were 300,000 lines of code as well in the cars, telling that when you see a stop sign, the car needs to stop. So that this was an if-then-else approach. And nowadays, with the latest full self-driving that Tesla is testing, they are running this end-to-end on neural networks, which means that they only capture the images from all the fleet of their cars, and the network is trained on that scale, and it suddenly starts to drive. It starts to imitate humans. You can inspire on this use case to see what's going to happen. Any company needs to pivot fast to this kind of approach.
Thanks, JP. Great. Moving to a different angle, I want to ask you, since generative AI is a game changer for all the companies, what strategic vision should business take to embrace this technology in order to gain a real competitive advantage?
The first thing is just CEOs and executive teams realizing how fast-paced this is, that the traditional way of doing things is coming to an end. This is unstoppable. The pace that this has is not the same as cloud or mobile that you could wait for 3 to 5 years to pivot. This evolves at 10 times Moore's law pace. And so you need to start thinking about rewiring your organization, because if you don't, you will become obsolete, because the companies will create such a digital divide between them and yourself that you will stay behind. And so I think that executive teams need to approach this from two angles. One is what I would call everyday AI or an augmented AI angle, where it's quite fast to deploy, quick wins. And we are talking basically about leveraging all the copilots that are already available, for instance, in the Microsoft stack or Google stack. So infusing these copilots in your entire organization. We are talking about simple things like these copilots helping to write emails, summarizing threads of emails, helping to write your sales team to write a proposal, or even having agents that listen to all the calls inside the company. We are talking about thousands of meetings that happen worldwide in each company, and just summarizing what happened in that call in a to-do list and send it to every director and member that was in that meeting. Just this small improvement is huge in these large organizations. And so I think this is the first angle that you need to tackle. And also, how do you empower and augment your frontline workers? And that is basically by leveraging the data that it's already in your IT systems. When they are in front of a customer, for instance, summarizing, you know, what happened in the last four visits of that customer to that company and bringing that information up in a flash of a second. These models are really good doing that. And so that brings, instead of the operator, the frontline worker having to have in his head 600 document pages, he can have a copilot that helps him every day in his work. The second angle, I would say, is what I would call a game-changing AI. And that angle means that you need to completely rethink how processes can be done with a technology that fundamentally shifts how humans and machines interact. And I can give you an example. For instance, if you think about a large health insurance company with 500 call center operators, most of the calls they answer today, more than 80% of those calls are for simple things. Like, you know, a customer is calling to ask for to see if his insurance policy is active or not, if he has a certain coverage. Those things will be offloaded to AI agents that can answer those calls. They will speak the same way as we do. They will even have the breathing space as humans do while they are speaking. They can have an Irish accent if an Irish customer is calling. And that will offload 80% of the demand that is coming to the call center. But more than that, you can do this in parallel. So you can answer 50, 60 customers, 100 customers in parallel, which is something you cannot do today. But to give you another example of what you can do, imagine your marketing department generating 10,000 emails to your customers when their birthday day comes with a personalized video from your CEO, giving them congratulations for their birthday, thanking them for the products that specific products that they bought in your company. And the CEO has never filmed that video. That was all AI generated. This is possible to do today. And if you don't realize what is happening, we are lagging behind. And I will end up just by signaling some examples that came on public. For instance, Tyler Perry, which is one of the most known actors, just canceled an $800 million contract to build a studio because he saw what OpenAI and their text-to-video models were doing. And so any company needs to have the same approach, the same mindset, because this will impact OPEX and CAPEX at the same time.
Okay, moving to the people. What new leadership skills and capabilities will companies need to truly become data and GenAI driven and to make it successful across the enterprise?
Most executives underestimate how hard it is to do a broad-scale transformation inside the company. There's a big distance between hype and execution, which leads to 80-90% failure. And that's because they usually do plug-and-play things. They buy from a certain vendor or a consultancy company. But, you know, on the longer run, that doesn't work. And that doesn't work because you need to invest time in getting the foundations right. And if there's one thing my 15 years experience inside this large organization has told me and has taught me is that the first thing that you need to account for is the organizational setup. And I would argue the most important thing is the full commitment from the executive team in the transformation. And that starts from the CEO. But at the same time, the members of the executive team are super busy. They are looking at the P&L, they are looking at quarterly earnings, and they don't have time for AI. And what happens usually is that they offload this to IT, which is also overloaded with cybersecurity and resilience and all of that. And so what I think needs to happen is that you need to have an executive team member, which is the chief AI officer, that is thinking about these issues every day. He's thinking about how is he going to rewire the company and redesign the company in each workflow, from legal to marketing to sales. And this member will not only influence the senior leadership team, but it will also influence the entire company. Because when you have a chief AI officer, you are sending a message to the organization that this topic is very important for the company. And so I would say that is the third pillar, is how do you empower the transformation? And that clearly comes from the personal involvement of the CEO. But that said, this is not an occasional pronouncement. This is something that you need to do every week, every month, sending that message, because that will block agendas from everyone, from every director, that will clear the road for the transformation. Again, we are talking about something that will fundamentally shift the way people work with technology. And so that requires a lot of change management. If the CEO is not empowering this every day, the transformation will fail. And the second angle, besides the organizational foundations, is the technology foundations that you need to build. And from my experience, the first thing you need to do is to decouple what is the data and AI transformation from the IT transformation. What that means is that you need to have a separate data platform that is capturing the information from all the systems every day. You leave the IT running, the operational systems running. You don't interfere with that. But on top of this platform, you are going to build the intelligence layer of the company. And what that means is that workflow by workflow, you are going to plug these AIs on top of this platform. And you are starting to help real time each business unit by giving them the power of this intelligence. And I would argue that is not only what the AI can do to boost the productivity of each employee, is also the capability that you suddenly gain to capture value from your customers. So just imagine that this platform, when it is horizontally deployed across the company, it will capture all the phone calls, all the emails, all the WhatsApps that were exchanged with customers. And you, in a flash of a second, you can leverage insights from those customers. You can ask some questions like, what are customers saying about my company? What are they complaining about? By cross-analyzing all these formats, because these models, they are multimodal. They can extract value from text, from images, from sound, from video. And so that's a fundamental shift in the way you see these models being deployed.
Shifting the conversation to healthcare, why is generative AI a unique opportunity for the sector?
First, because 80% of healthcare information is unstructured, which means it is written in clinical notes, medical images, pathology reports, and so forth. And after, because 97% of the data that is produced annually by any healthcare organization is not used at scale. And so you have a unique opportunity to transform a sector that is lagging behind any other and to transform this into knowledge. And the reason it was not transformed yet is that because this is a high-stakes business. You cannot stop an healthcare organization. You cannot stop an hospital to change all the IT systems. It was not possible. And so that's the first approach. The second thing you need to account in healthcare is that you have a workforce problem. After pandemic, the workforce dropped more than 30%. And so that means you cannot scale a doctor to every patient and every bed. And so what that means is that you need new approaches, new intelligence approaches. I would call it a digital workforce that complements the human labor and that acts every day, working side by side with clinicians, and allows them to perform at the top of their license. And when I say this, my background in healthcare has shown me that there are a lot of problems, small issues that happen every day, miscommunication among teams, young doctors, senior doctors, late nights and weekends. And so the level of care that is being provided is not equal in each region, in each healthcare organization. And so you have an opportunity with these models to bring a standardized level of care, because these are tireless models that work 24/7. They can be by your side. And to finish up this point, I think there's a huge transformation that is happening in healthcare as well with these models, which is we are moving from a previous world where we had what I would call a narrow and dumb and traditional AI, which was an AI that would only work in a specific scenario for a specific problem, to a general AI, which, as I was saying before, it understands the context, it can analyze the clinical notes, the medical image, the sound of a certain equipment, all at the same time, and produce an inference on top of that. And that approximates a lot how a doctor resonates, because a doctor, if he's looking for a nodule in a CT scan, he will not only look at the image, which is what these current AI models do. He will look at the image, he will look at the clinical history of that patient, he will look at the blood results, he will look at the pathology report, and based on all of that, he will produce an inference. And so, as I was saying, these models are starting to be very close to the way we resonate, and so they will become much more helpful to clinicians.
How is generative AI challenging the traditional deference to medical judgment? And what steps should healthcare leaders take to reshape the culture and fully leverage artificial intelligence?
I think this is not only an issue of healthcare leaders. We need to understand that healthcare is complex, it's an high-stakes business, and it involves multiple stakeholders. So there's a role to play by every stakeholder to take AI and Gen AI forward in healthcare and to change these dynamics. There are three stakeholders. The first stakeholder are the tech companies. The tech companies have been selling the wrong message in healthcare, and that's one of the reasons why it has not had much progress, because they have been selling an AI that will replace doctors, and that immediately kills your transformation. First, because it's too naive to think that even these models, these powerful models, will replace a doctor. If you've never worked with a doctor, you can think about this. But if you work side by side with doctors, you understand that there's a part of their reasoning that we could call some magic art that they cannot explain. But I can guarantee you that if you have a serious disease, you will go to a doctor. And so what I think technology companies need to do is that they need to focus on the 2/3 of the medical time that is spent on back office tasks, on mundane tasks that are not related to diagnosis, that can be automated. I'm talking about, for instance, summarizing all the history of a patient. I'm talking about the doctor-to-patient relationship on an outpatient visit being captured, their voice being captured automatically, and the doctor not writing on the computer. And so that's where technology companies need to focus. Then the healthcare leaders, the executives that are managing these organizations, they also have a role to play. I would say that they need to think much more on a computational care level. So how are the computers in my organizations are going to start helping my clinical teams? And I can give you an example from a large project that I've led, where we built for a public hospital, 1,000 beds, a huge foundational platform that analyzed 500 billion data points. It predicted patients that were going into the ICU. It would summarize clinical notes for doctors. And this was done back in 2015. And the reason this was done was because the executive team formed multidisciplinary teams between the doctors and the tech teams, and my team at the time. And this synergy is really important because it brings trust. We were forming teams with young doctors that would then influence the senior ones. That's how the word of mouth gets spread out into the organization. And suddenly you start to see new ideas popping up in the clinician's head, because the senior ones start seeing the younger ones, and it's a difference like going to a library or going to Google. They understand that they have a new tool set and they also want to be part of that. And that's how you change the culture in the organization. And finally, in terms of the dynamics that this will have in the interaction with patients, I can say from my perspective that it will completely change how doctors and patients relate to each other nowadays. Because what you will see in 2-3 years' time is a hyper-informed patient that has the best medical knowledge at their fingertips in their mobile phone, because these models are coming to the edge. These models are coming to your mobile phone. And so the patient will be able to discuss his clinical case with the doctor at a level of knowledge that it was never possible to do before. And so doctors need to prepare upfront and see these co-pilots also as personal assistants of patients. And at the end, you can imagine a world where doctors will also prescribe these models for certain diseases to be personal assistants of those patients. And so there are a lot of dynamics that will change.
Can you please highlight for us some specific scenarios where you see generative AI being deployed in the healthcare sector? You already probably touched this previously, but we would like some examples from you.
Thinking from an executive perspective, once again, we need to think about this digital workforce that I would call also a super staffing workforce, where we start to have agents, so models that can act on our behalf, impacting every part of the patient journey. And I would say that there are, you know, three angles to see this: before visit, during the visit to an healthcare organization, and after care. Before visit, these models will be able to call patients and obtain variables about what happened from the last episode until the current one, asking those questions to patients. They will also be able to analyze all the blood sampling of that patient, medical images, and correlate with the previous ones, because these models can generate, for instance, an evolution of a CT scan in 1 year time and compare with the previous one. So when we talk about generative AI, this is one of the superpowers. And so when the patient gets into the doctor's office, there's a lot of work that was prepared upfront, and that will leave much more time for the doctor-patient relationship to happen than what is currently done. Then there's the other angle, which is during the visit. We already discussed about outpatient visits and the doctor-to-patient conversation being completely recorded by an agent that is listening. This is already happening in the US with Kaiser Permanente. They are deploying this at scale. But also in terms of an inpatient visit, so a long stay in the hospital, there are a lot of things that these agents can help, from summarizing the clinical notes to being 24/7, looking at the lab results, the medication that the patient is taking, vital signs, and, for instance, identifying drug-to-drug interactions that the doctor might have missed and signaling to that doctor, oh, probably you need to change a specific prescription, or because I've seen that there's a drug-to-drug interaction, I went to the internet and I've checked the current guidelines that are being published, and I've checked that there's a misuse and some reported adverse events in this specific interaction. And so having these agents working for you, and even at the end, helping prescribe medication with a doctor always doing the thumbs up or thumbs down, the doctor is always in the middle. So you will never leave this running in the wild. That is a complete mistake. And so besides that, we also need to think about what can happen after care. I would say that we need to look, for instance, at US that has 68 million chronic patients. When you think at this scale, you can think that you can have models that call patients as well after care, and that can check with the patient if the patient is checking his blood pressure. They can check if eventually that patient is taking a new drug that he didn't told the doctor, and once again, running through the entire internet and checking if there's another interaction for that specific drug that he should be aware. And so we will see this digital workforce working side by side with clinicians in ways that we've never seen before.
JP, let me thank you for making the time to speak with us today. It was great to share this platform with you.
Thanks for listening to the Hydrogen Struggles Leadership Podcast. To make sure you don't miss more future-shaping ideas and conversations, please subscribe to our channel on the podcast app. And if you're listening via LinkedIn, Twitter, or YouTube, why not share this with your connections? Until next time.